Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650, that's the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Just before we get to our guest, I also have to tell you that Sportsnet 650 and Barnside Brewing have dropped the gloves on a new pale ale that's perfect for hockey season, the brand new 5 for Fighting Hazy Pale. This crisp and refreshing hazy pale ale is a celebration of flavor and balance. Brewed with our own farm-grown hops, it boasts a delightful harmony of fruity and floral notes. Each sip hints at the juicy essence of ripe peach, complemented by a soft, velvety mouthfeel that keeps you coming back for more. Four packs will be available starting December 9th at Barnside Brewing Tap Room, participating retail locations, or on tap at your local pub. All right. Very excited to try some of that soon. But right now, let's go to the phone line where we are joined from The Athletic. He covers the NHL draft and NHL prospects. He is Corey Pronman. Corey, thank you very much for making time for us today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. So obviously a big week for prospects in the NHL with the, you know, World Juniors coming up and Team Canada announces its selection camp. And here in Vancouver, we're all very focused on Sawyer Mineau getting the invitation to attend that camp. And, you know, first of all, I mean, do you expect him to be on Team Canada at the World Juniors?
I probably wouldn't make any guarantees. It's a competitive team, and there's a lot of really good players they invite into that camp. And I think while Mineau has been very promising over the last year or two in the Western League, you know, when you compare him to names like first-round picks, Tanner Mullendick, Oliver Bonk, Sam Dickinson, potential top 2-3 overall, Matthew Schaefer, he's probably not that caliber of player. However, I think he's very well impressed the Canada brass. He was really good at the summer camp there. I thought he was one of their better defensemen overall at the camp in the summer. And just talking to scouts around the Western League, they've liked his two-way game all season. And I would say he has probably a better than 55.0% chance at making the team right now.
Corey, you know, some of the scouts I talked to out West have some skepticism about just the overall skill level. In terms of it, how it'll translate to the NHL level. We've seen him produce at a pretty good rate on a bottom feeding Seattle team since they sort of got dismantled a couple of years ago. Do you share those concerns, or what's going to permit him to make it, in your view?
I think that's valid. I think, especially for maybe an average-sized defenseman, would I call him a dynamic offensive player? Probably not, but I think he is a smart player. I think he has good enough skill. He has a good point shot. I think he's just a really solid all-around player. He's a strong skater. He works hard. He can make a first pass. You know, I look at this player, and if you're projecting him into a top four in the NHL, I would probably have some reservations. But I think for a third-round pick, at the minimum, he looks like that caliber of player and maybe even a slightly better.
What are the things that he does well that Canucks fans should be watching for when they see him hit the ice for Team Canada at the tournament, if he makes it?
The mobility definitely stands out. He's a really good skater. He competes hard. You know, good enough hockey sense. Just a very trustworthy player in all situations. I don't think if when he's out there he's going to be a liability. I think it's just, you know, is he going to be the guy they lean on in the hard minutes? But when he played against Team USA in the summer when they – Team Canada addressed a lot of their best players. Quite honestly, he was that guy for them in that game. They played him a ton relative to some other really high draft picks. So I think coaches just like this player.
Does he figure to be a big part of the penalty killing solution for Team Canada if he's on the roster as well? Because, you know, we know Team Canada often, they really lean on the idea of, you know, we're not building an all-star team. We're trying to fill out all the different roles and check all those different boxes. And I wonder if maybe that's a route for Sawyer Mineau to increase his chances of making the team as well.
Well, I think you look at the blue line that they invited, and there's a lot of really good two-way defensemen. They didn't invite Carter Yakimchuk. They didn't invite Zane Parikh. They didn't bring in guys who are basically just pure offense type of players. So I think you look at this blue line, whether it's Tanner Mullendike, whether it's Oliver Bong, whether it's Dickinson or Schaefer, or even like an Andrew Gibson, Caden Price, Harrison Brunecke. There's a bunch of guys who have size and skill and mobility. And I don't know if they're going to have two or three designated penalty killers. I think a lot of those guys can kill penalties, but that just seems to be a player type they really like. So I don't know what Mino's exact role would be at the tournament, presuming he would make the team, but I would guess he's not the power play guy. And
sure.
So naturally, that would be the other unit you'd see him more regularly on.
And, you know, with a prospect like Mino, as we kind of look ahead to his potential pro future, and as you said, you know, he's not small, but kind of average size, 6'1", and not necessarily a super dynamic offensive player. And, you know, I think sometimes guys that fit that mold, it can be kind of hard for them to find their niche and really make it and establish themselves in the NHL. If he is going to do that, you know, even as a 5'6" guy, what needs to be his calling card? What's the path for him kind of establishing himself and, you know, his role at the NHL level one day?
I think when you're maybe not a super dynamic player overall, even if you're a good skater, it's going to be just the compete level and just having some physicality in his game. I think that's what really appeal to coaches. If you're not going to be a scorer, you've got to be somebody who's going to make a lot of stops, who's going to be able to kill penalties, who can be used in defensive zone draws. And so I think Mino competes well, but if he adds like a real hardness element in his game overall, I think that could help him establish a full-time NHL career.
Corey, when you think about this Hockey Canada roster and you discuss the player types that they've brought and sort of some of the high pedigree defenders that they've spurned, I love to ask this every year anyway, because I always suspect the answer is yes. Has Hockey Canada Galaxy-brained this, and Galaxy-brained it not even in a fun and interesting way?
No, I don't really think so. I think, quite honestly, well, we mentioned Parrick and Yakimchuk to start, but quite frankly, when I've watched them in the first half this year, I don't think they've been as impressive as you would have hoped, given for two guys who both scored 30 goals the prior year in the respective CHL leagues. I don't think they've been amazing. Like, we look to talk about Zane Parrick, you look at Sam Dickinson, who is 2-3 inches taller than him, skates better than him, and is laughing him in every offensive category in the OHL this season. So, I mean, he's a better defender and he's providing more offense. I don't dispute that why they would bring a guy like Dickinson over Parrick. You know, Dickinson has just been incredible this year. And Yakimchuk, just like Parrick, has been just okay defensively. So I think I'm not offended by those. I think they're both great, great NHL prospects. You know, you look at both of them and you think of how Brent Clark, for example, didn't make the team year after his draft. And, you know, and he for valid reasons, and, you know, you look at him in the NHL now, 3-4 years later, he's a very good player. The other two really high picks of note was TJ Ginla and Beckett Seneca, the 3rd and 6th overall picks in the last draft. And that just comes down to the fact that they both need to be top 9 forwards in this team. They're not going to kill penalties. Whether or not you agree with that roster-building philosophy that there has to be penalty kills in the fourth line, Canada does. When the Four Nations rosters come out, it's going to be the same philosophy. That's just the way these management types tend to build the teams. As you look at the top 9 forwards, it's like, well, where does Seneca fit? Where does Ginla fit? And then you look at the respective leagues, and, for example, you look at Seneca, and it's like, well, he's having a really good year, but Porter Marton's having an absolutely fantastic year. He's nearly 2 points a game right now while being bigger and harder to play against. So I think Marton's breakout edged out Seneca. And then I don't think Ginla, quite frankly, has a monster first half this year, as some expected. And I think that just leads to the high-profile cuts. But even in my time covering Team Canada, there's always one big name they leave off that gets people riled up. I've yet to see 4 top 10 picks get cut from the selection camp. That's a new one for me.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, if they win, it's all forgotten, it's all good. If they don't win, there's going to be a lot of people continuing to ask these questions and make these criticisms. And, you know, look, we're still a few weeks out.
Myself among them.
Yes.
Landon DuPont, should he have been considered? Is he special enough to have been considered, Pronman? He's like the patron saint of this radio program, so we had to ask.
And Landon's just fantastic. I saw him live a couple of weeks ago at the U17 Challenge. He's, you know, a fantastic pro prospect. To come in as a 16-year-old would have been a major ask. Like, at the U17 Challenge, he was one of the very best players, but I wasn't watching him in those games thinking, oh yeah, he's ready to go up against James Hagans and Ryan Leonard and take care of them defensively. Like, I think that would have been a really big ask of him as a 16-year-old. Like I said, he's a special player. From what I've seen so far, he's every bit deserving of the hype he's getting. But that would have been, a very ambitious ask, I think, of him.
I also wanted to ask you. Go ahead.
I think he's 15. Sorry.
Yeah, he is. He doesn't even turn 16 until May, which is wild, considering he's point per game in the dub as a defenseman right now. And we've been hyping up Landon Dupont. The other guy we've spent years hyping up, and he's getting the recognition he's going to be on Team Canada, is Gavin McKenna. And still not his draft year. Obviously, he'll be a 2026 draft prospect. But you look at the numbers he's putting up; they're pretty eye popping. What he's doing. I mean, how is he tracking as a prospect relative some of the other, really high-level guys we've seen in recent years?
Well, that's where I was going to go with that. As I also say, even looking at Gavin McKenna, who is just, looks like a favorite to be a first overall pick in 2026, an absolutely dynamic offensive player. But for an underage player, which is what McKenna is, DuPont would have been a double underage to be on Team Canada. It's hard to make an impact. I mean, people remember what Connor Bedard did, but Bedard was a real outlier in that regard. When Alexis Lafrenière, for example, was an underage on Team Canada, he was a 13th forward. Connor McDavid had some good games as an underage player on Team Canada as a world junior player, but I wouldn't have called him a top player at that level by any means. So I think with McKenna, if he can come in and be impactful for them right away, I don't think anyone's going to be shocked. He's absolutely a fantastic player, but just when you're that young and not physically developed, it wouldn't surprise you if in the top games his minutes get limited a little bit.
With regards to just the... So I want to pivot and talk about some other Canucks prospects here generally, Corey. Tom Volander had a really hot start to his season offensively. That's cooled a bit. Still playing huge minutes for this BU team that lost, Macklin, Celebrini, and Lane Hutson, like a couple of guys who are, not just NHL players, but difference-making NHL players. What are you seeing from him this year? I've long been concerned about the puck skills, but it feels like he's gone to some lengths to sort of address those weaknesses in his game this year.
Yeah, I don't think you're looking at Tom and thinking of him as a first power play type in the NHL by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's a very nice all-around player. He's an excellent skater. He plays hard. He's a guy who at BU has trusted to play major minutes to match up against the team's best players. He's a guy who can provide secondary offense. He has some skill. He's got good enough hockey sense. What was interesting about Willander is that at this age level, meaning the 05 he had to go up against, he was absolutely fantastic at the U18 World Championships. He was asked to shut down, Will Smith, Ryan Leonard, Gabe Perreault, and, the play of him and Theo Lindstein in that tournament nearly helped Sweden with a massive upset. So I'll be really curious to see just how much he plays for Team Sweden. And it wouldn't surprise you if we get to the end of the World Juniors and he's one of the very best defensemen in the tournament.
Yeah, and as you said, at the NHL level, you're probably not looking at him to be a first power play guy, even at these World Juniors, right? With Sandin Palicka, he's probably not going to be in that role for Sweden, but he does maybe have the profile of a player who could be, okay, not first power play, but in every other situation, a huge minutes guy and a pretty key piece for Team Sweden.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I don't expect he'll be a first power play. With the age group, he has at times been the first power play over Sandin Palicka, but Sandin Palicka has been so good in the SHL offensively, I'd be surprised in that regard. But I think Tom's going to play a ton. I think he's going to be really good. And I think he is still tracking towards being a potential top four defenseman in the NHL.
Have you seen him be a little bit more assertive in terms of his offensive game, in terms of his, like attacking instincts over the course of the season at BU, Corey?
Yeah. I mean, it's not his power play still there. I mean, Cole Hudson's a really big part of that team after Lane left. But I mean, I have no issues with his offensive sense, puck skills. If you're just thinking about him as a guy who's not going to be a legit power play type in the NHL, I think he can move a puck. I think he can make a play. I think he's got enough touch with the puck. I just don't think it's the skating is what really gets you excited about him. He's going to be a clear top echelon NHL skater.
And Jonathan Lekarimäki off to a tremendous start at the American League level. We saw him get blooded a little bit in the NHL. What are you thinking about his first sort of 2 months of North American professional hockey? When you're sort of tracking how he's trending here, has he exceeded your expectations in terms of making a quick adjustment?
I think about level. I mean, he was still really good against men last year in the SHL.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's a different level, the SHL versus American League, just the level of physicality, the smaller rinks, et cetera. But, you know, I know he had a good camp, and, you know, he's been able to score goals in the American League, and I think that's about par for what he is. I think with Lekkerimäki, there's never any doubt on the fact that this guy is an extremely skilled forward. There's no doubt on the way he could shoot pucks. I mean, you've even seen a few times this year the mid-range shot he has. It can be pretty special. I think for him, it's just kind of at the NHL level, can he fight through checks? Can he get into the inside areas of the ice to score? I think those have always been the major challenges for him against men, and I think those are the kind of things you're going to want to be monitoring as you go forward in his career.
Corey, really appreciate the insight. Thanks for doing this.
Yep, sure thing. Thank you.
That is Corey Pronman from The Athletic, breaking down Sawyer Mineo's inclusion in the Team Canada selection camp for the World Juniors, talking a little bit about Team Canada generally and some other Canucks prospects, including Tom Volander and the role he can expect to play for Team Sweden coming up at the World Juniors. And as Corey said, yeah, expect him to be a major minutes eater for Team Sweden at that event. And, you know, interesting to hear Corey's thoughts about, as you said, the annual Hockey Canada galaxy braining, the selection process for the World Juniors, which really is like something you can kind of set your watch by at this point. Like, we know how they do it. We can all expect it. We can all see it coming. Maybe a little bit more jarring this time, as he said, right? Just with the, what, like four recent top 10 picks all left off the team. And I don't know.
There's a couple that make no sense to me, though.
Yeah.
Okay. Fort St. John goaltender Evan Gardner has led the WHL in save percentage for two consecutive years. He's 18 years old. He's a little undersized. He's 6'1". But if you're talking about dominating, like, first of all, despite that, you know, this isn't a situation like, what's the other local, Thomas Milich, right? Who's the Winnipeg Jets draft pick who went undrafted 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, he's having like stud seasons in the American League already. Yeah. Like, he shouldn't have been passed over, but, you know, he was like 5'11", right? Like, there were real size concerns.
But Dustin Wolf is 6 foot. He went in the seventh round. Right?
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, well, I don't know, but it's like, he's got a .918 save percentage in the NHL right now.
He's been the best American League goalie for the last 2 years. But Milich went undrafted twice, New Westminster goaltender. But he's made like a pretty sharp transition to the professional hockey ranks. He's actually not having a great start to his campaign this year with the Manitoba Moose, but nonetheless, like his AHL performance, you know, across for anyway, in his case, when it took him a while to cement himself as Hockey Canada's like number one choice for the U-20s, he hadn't been drafted. Like, Evan Gardner was a second round pick. Mm-hmm. Evan Gardner has draft capital behind him, led the W-dub in save percentage the last 2 years, not even invited to camp? Makes no sense.
Yeah, that one's especially funny too, considering the current panic about Canadian goaltending, totally justified panic about who's going to be getting minutes at the Four Nations and then the Olympics. And like, hey, Joey Decord, we've never talked to you before, but maybe do you want to play for us?
So that one makes no sense to me. And then I think Parekh makes no sense. I mean, I get that Dickinson, like, I'm not saying he should be on the team over Dickinson. Dickinson's a lefty anyway. But Parekh is, he was the CHL Defenseman of the Year last year. He was the number one player and the number one defender on the Memorial Cup winning team. Like, he's not just exceptional. He's not just an NHL caliber defenseman today. He's a proven winner, a guy who dominated for a team that won the Memorial Cup last year. No brainer. I mean, honestly, those two make me a little bit nervous that we're going to see, you know, Canada competing in the bronze medal game and be thinking, man, they probably should have had more skill on this blue line.
Yeah, and it does, I guess this, I understand at least some of the thought process behind how they go about it, but the thing that always sticks with me, and I thought the Brant Clark example was a great one that Corey brought up, right? It just seems like sometimes players get outside of the field of consideration for Hockey Canada for like somewhat arbitrary reasons, and then there's no way to get back in, right? Like, once you're out of Hockey Canada's field of vision, it's extremely possible to get back into consideration in a way that doesn't entirely make sense from the outside.
And it's why, I mean, obviously, you know, tremendous for Kamloops native and Canucks draft pick Sawyer Mineo to be headed to the World Juniors. But there's also an element to which we have to be careful about using the World Juniors as this, like, incredible signal.
Yeah.
About a player's sort of NHL or pro ceiling. Right? Like, sometimes it matters, but sometimes it kind of just doesn't. Like, sometimes it doesn't tell us as much as it should.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun diversion more than anything else. More than it is necessarily a meaningful measuring stick for these prospects.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's what it is. We should all... It's great to enjoy it. It's great to have fun and root for Canada, but...
It's not fate.
It's also not easy or not difficult to go back and find like tons of examples of guys who dominated and then didn't do anything at the NHL level, or the opposite, right? Guys who didn't do much at the World Juniors and then went on to be really, really good pros after that. And there's so much that goes into it, right? Like what your role is, how the coach sees you, all of those things. Plus, it's just an incredibly short sample against other teams. So, yeah, I think... We should know by now not to read too much into what these prospects do at the World Juniors. But again, congratulations to Sawyer Mineo. Feels like he's got a pretty good shot to be on the team. We know Tom Volander is going to be there as well. So there'll be a couple of Canucks prospects for people to sit down and watch when the tournament rolls around later on this month, which is always fun. All right. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your thoughts in. The Canucks are wrapping up this six-game road trip against the Minnesota Wild tonight in Minnesota. I've seen a lot of people point out that the last time the Canucks played in Minnesota was that wacky game. Remember, they gave up 10 goals?
Who could forget?
That was a truly bizarre.
I actually still look back on that as a pretty impressive Canucks performance, by the way. They might have played one of their most dynamic 5-on-5 games of the year in stretches of that when they were trailing. It was just that, like, you know, the Wild would take a 2-goal lead again on some bizarre, you know, rush chance goal.
Wasn't there like multiple 5-on-3 goals, I want to say too? Like there was like a ton of penalties.
And there was like a bunch of unscreened rush goals, which, you know, I'm always looking at as like not legit. Or not that they're not legit. They're obviously unbelievable shooters and on and on. But they're just not things that I think you can take to the bank and dine out on. And so the Wild would like score one of those. And then the Canucks would have like four of the most glorious creative scoring chances that they generated all year. Because generating glorious creative scoring chances wasn't exactly that team's bread and butter. And then, you know, it would be like a puck to flex in off Marco Rossi's skate. You know, and it's just like, oh, man. By the way, thinking back to that game, I actually sort of look at it as a bit of a watershed in the Canucks season in retrospect for the goalie usage.
Yes, because that was kind of the game where Casey DeSmith lost the confidence of the coaching staff.
And where they started to ride Thatcher Demko at a level that probably wasn't sustainable, in my view anyway.
Yeah, it was a turning point for sure. We're right on time. Right on time.
We don't have a guest.
How dare you?
You know what? I'm just happy to listen to the music. Little, you know, the town girl that will become a princess shopping for eggs.
Hope's patience.
All right. We'll take a break. Another hour.
Chipmunk singing about what a beautiful town we all live in together.
Did you see there's a new Travis Kelce Hallmark movie?
I did. And
with him in it? Or just
his mother?
His mom.
But the actor who plays the Chiefs player in it, who falls in love with the pop starlet, is the same actor who portrayed Gronk on the Patriots winning. Or
that's what I call range, baby.
Sorry, what's it called?
I know what you mean. The Aaron Hernandez one.
So
he's a tight end actor. That's what he does.
He's a tight ends guy, and apparently is like buddies, like actually knows Gronk in real life.
Yeah.
Anyway,
who else was
hero?
Who else was in the news that it turned out Gronk knew? Some guy went viral.
It was the Yankees baseball guy. It was the Yankees.
Yeah, the Yankees baseball guy. That's right. He was like, oh, I was buddies with Gronk at Florida. Like, what?
I think if you've met Gronk, you basically are like an honorary Forrest Gump. You're like bound to find your way into world history at some random moment.
Oh, man, I forgot about the Yankees baseball guys. Like, we play defense. We D up in this section. What are you talking about?
Yeah, and people were like talking to him, and it's like, No one needs to talk to this guy.
No, absolutely not. All right, we'll take a break. More Canucks talk on the other side here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We're live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We got a couple of open segments here to finish off the show on a Canucks game day. So if you have questions you want us to answer, comments you want to send in, please do to the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Apparently that rejoiner music was like a sound-alike of a very popular radio song from this summer. Dom is aghast that we didn't recognize it.
Aghast
so
is a
old.
Bit strong. More unpleasantly surprised.
I've been unpleasantly. Why? Why would it be unpleasant for you?
I just hoped you would know a popular hit like Levitating by Dua Lipa.
Why would you care if I know it or not?
Good question. I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't really affect my
I really broke your brain there for a second. Yeah. You're like, hey, wait a second.
You know what? You do you. Live your life.
Thank you,
Jamie.
Dom. I appreciate that. Thank you. That's what we're all striving for. Anyway, 650-650. That's the Dunbar Lumber text line. Before we get back into the the Canucks stuff per se, and I'm looking ahead to the game tonight, I want to get your take, Drantz, on a take that I've started to see crop up more and more from people covering the league as a whole, which is basically that this year is either more wide open or the league as a whole is maybe less impressive at the top than we've seen in a while. Just the idea that maybe there's no single team you look at, as there has been in recent years, sometimes anyways, where they get off to this incredible start and they were a cup favorite already at the beginning of the year. And you look at it and you say, wow, they're the cup favorite. They're going to be really, really difficult to beat. Because this year, you look right now, the first three teams in points percentage in the NHL, the Minnesota Wild, the Washington Capitals, the Winnipeg Jets. And I don't think anybody would have had them in their top, five or six Stanley Cup contending teams to begin the season. Now, then you start to get into, Carolina, perennial contender, although questions remain about their ability to go deep in the playoffs. Dallas is up there, perennial contender, of course, as well. But it is interesting. And, I guess a lot of this is going to depend on how worried or not worried you are about Edmonton's ultimate ceiling and ultimate performance. But are you buying the idea that the league is a little bit more wide open at the top than it has been in recent years?
Yes. And here's, look, we don't have to guess. We can put actual data to this. So the Minnesota Wild are the number one team in the NHL at the moment by point percentage, right?
Yeah.
At what?
750.
750 point percentage?
Yeah.
Okay, so 750 point percentage. There's three teams. Am I right about this? There's
three teams over 700.
Three teams over 700. That's the Wild, the Caps, Washington Capitals, and the just as we all drew it up.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's a huge part of this. It's like the best. If the Hurricanes, the Stars, and the Oilers had those 3 points percentages, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
So on December 4th last year. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
On December 4th last year, 2023, there were four teams above 700, but there was also a team above 800 in the New York Rangers. So it felt a little more stratified. The year prior, the 2023 season, 22-23 season, you had a Boston. That was the Boston Bruins final dance.
Yeah.
They were 20-3. For an 870 point percentage. The Devils were also at 820, right? And then you had the Vegas Golden Knights at above 700. And then the year prior to that, you had the Panthers, the Rangers, the Flames, the Wild, the Oilers, the Capitals, the Maple Leafs, and the Carolina Hurricanes.
Wow.
All above 700, with Tampa Bay at 696 too.
Yeah.
What was that sound?
Yeah, I'm hearing like a sound in the background.
Is there like a pigeon? Sounds like a pigeon in the wind.
Is it, or like kids laughing or something?
I wonder if it's coming from my phone or something. Anyway.
Are your laptops on?
No, mine's volume's off. Maybe there's a pigeon in here.
I have no idea what that sound is. Anyway.
Are you okay?
No, I'm fine. The
I'm hearing
none
it.
Of us hear what
I'm
you're hearing.
It too. I'm hearing it too.
Anyway, it's fine. We're fine, I'm sure. The the evil pigeon in the airwaves. The truth is I do think the league is in this final stages of flat cap. Of the flat cap, effectively, and I do think that we're in this moment where the difference between the have teams and the have not teams is thinner than it's been in a while, like more permeable.
Even if you look at the bottom end, right? There's only two teams below a 400 points percentage, and one of them is Montreal at 396, right? So like Chicago's bad, don't get me wrong, but they're not like truly, truly putrid like we've seen some teams at the bottom of the league in recent years.
No, and even among the teams that are like sub 500, like the Senators have some juice, even though they've faded of late.
Yep.
The Sharks have some juice. We saw it all last week. The Predators could absolutely get right and reel off a 13-2-3 stretch or a 13-2-1 stretch. The Red Wings aren't like an easy out night to night. Utah is actually pretty good. Right. So you sort of go on down the list and, you know, even the bad teams aren't that terrible this year. So,
nope.
You know, I do think it's there's more parity at the moment than there has been in an awfully long time. It does feel like that. And I do think it's somewhat wide open. But I also think I do think that like the Jets, the Hurricanes, the Stars, the Vegas Golden Knights, I think the Wild maybe, but I'm probably a little bit skeptical of that. And then I think once you get to the playoffs, the Panthers, the Oilers.
Yeah.
And like I'd throw the Lightning in there, even though, you know, it feels like they're sort of post window. The truth is that, you know, they're going to add a right-handed finisher for their first power play unit. They've got a lot of dogs on that team. Their defense is looking pretty good. Like, and they've got the know-how, right? Like that's going to be a really tough team. I do think there's a material gap between those teams that I listed and how imposing we expect them to be in the spring and how imposing they will be come the spring and some of the other Striver sort of tier teams.
I'm not sure I'd put Tampa in there as like, I hear what you're saying, but they feel to me more like they're going to be an extremely tough out, but it's going to be asking a lot for them to survive to four rounds. You know what I mean? Like it's going to be every series they're in is going to be really, really close and really, really tough, but that's, like it's asking for too much luck and too much bounces for them to go all the way.
Maybe, but Nikita Kucherov gets every bounce he's ever been on the ice for. So I don't know what you're talking about.
That's a good point.
I've never seen anything like it. Guy just like, he's like in a puck battle. He's like, oh, you know what would be better if I backed away from this puck battle? And then immediately the puck's on his stick. It's just like, how did you do that? I'm sorry, I've never seen someone approach 1,000 NHL games played and get every single bounce,
every single
shift. It's unreal. It's a gift.
But yeah, I think you're right.
Do you think his life is like that? Is he like, you know, the character in Deadpool whose like skill is that they're extraordinarily lucky?
Yeah.
I swear he's that person.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Or, like when you drink the potion in Harry Potter and it just goes your way.
Liquid luck?
Yeah. Probably.
Felix Felicis.
That's right. Yeah.
Yep. Wow. I'm such a millennial. That's pathetic.
Just two extremely 37 and 38 year old dudes over here dropping Harry Potter references.
Well, you tried.
No, it was a reference. I knew the name. I just didn't want to sound like a huge nerd on the radio and say it. You had no such compunction.
Yeah. I'm just going to do me, man.
Absolutely. But to bring it back around to the Canucks, right? And this idea of...
Is it the dreaded morning dove, asks Owen and Burnaby? Yes. This is a John Woo production suddenly.
Slow motion doves flying around in the studio.
We're weirdly
a really
black
controversial
leather.
Decision by Barra to bring these doves into the studio. I'm not sure what he was thinking there.
He's like, yeah, they're out of place, but they look fabulous.
They look awesome. Look really cool. Great visuals.
Yep.
Anyways, to bring it back around to the Canucks, you know, we keep using we're in a holding pattern, right? You know, they got to hold the fort for right now. We don't know what this team is. We don't know what their ceiling is going to be. We're not really going to know you know, for maybe another 6 weeks. I mean, who knows? We'll see what Filip Hronek's timeline ends up being, but it could be longer than that, even in the case of him. But if you are trying to build the kind of the bull case for not writing this team's season off yet, and you know, the show that I did without you down at Hotel Vancouver on Thursday last week, that was the day the Filip Hronek news broke, and we got a lot of texts in basically saying, you know, not quite explicitly in so many words, but basically along the lines of, the season is over, I am writing off the season. And I spent a little bit of time in that show basically saying, look, I'm not guaranteeing that things are going to turn out all right. There's a lot of bad things that could still happen and ways this season could permanently go off the rails. But there's also just so much uncertainty that it's way too early to write things off just yet. And one of the things in their favor is, well, no one's really distinguished themselves at the top of the league, right? Like, Winnipeg's been really, really good. Fair to have some questions about their status as, you know, legit, no doubt about it, top-tier Stanley Cup contenders. Maybe the same with Minnesota. So in some ways, if you were going to, you know, be stuck in a holding pattern in December as a would-be aspiring Stanley Cup contending team, this is not a bad time to be doing it. This is not a bad year to be doing it, right? Because there are some seasons where, you know, the line is always like, you get to this point of the year and you look at whatever team X that's, you know, at an 800 winning percentage, and you're like, well, you're never going to beat that team in a 7-game series. So, you know, pack it in, right? Like, you're sure. The gap is so big. Why even bother trying? It's never going to happen. I don't know if you see that team in the Western Conference, right? Right now. Edmonton could get there for sure. Dallas, we'll see what other teams do. But right now, well, I don't think you're looking at anybody and saying, like, Winnipeg, that's hopeless.
No, but Winnipeg looks like they have the clearest path to that, I would say. You disagree? They just have so much depth, man.
They are really deep, but I don't know. I guess
you,
it depends.
You don't like their top end?
No, it all depends on Hellebuck.
Yeah, well, that's and how they use him, right? Because, I mean,
because if you think, like, Hellebuck obviously is always going to be, if he's in form, it's going to be terrifying to go into a series against Winnipeg.
But, you know, even among his NHL peers, right, there are beginning to be questions asked to some extent about, you know, the constant playoff yips that he seems to get every year. I remain convinced, like, if you're Hellebuck and it's like 60, 64, 66, you know what I mean? 45 of 56, 58 of 60. I guess they played 69 before the shutdown, right?
Yeah.
If you're playing 63, 67 the year before, like, they really need to ease off his usage. They got to play him like 55, but he's already played 19. So
yeah, he's played 19 to 25.
They need to spot him more rest. I really think he should get to 55. If we were doing a Winnipeg Jets radio show, I'd be like, we can't do this again. What are we doing? He's never at his best at the end of the season because we trot him out there like this. Like, I would be losing my mind if I was covering the Jets.
Because I agree. If Connor Hellebuck is at his best, then yes, Winnipeg is a terrifying prospect to go up against in the playoffs. If he's not at his best, still a good team. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
I just think they're
lose a lot of the mystique.
I just think they're really complete.
Yeah, so they are.
It's
they
a
are,
really complete
sure.
team, and I'd add this: we've never seen. So, you know, you've got the cap that's about to go up significantly, right? You've got the normal financial pressures that exist for an NHL team operating in by far the smallest market. In North America, that supports, like, from a corporate base perspective, from a raw size perspective, that supports an NHL lineup. There are real financial pressures coming on that Jets team. And frankly, some of those financial pressures have been brought to bear and felt pretty sorely by that organization in the years since the pandemic already. Given what they've accomplished in the first half, like, I don't know that you've ever seen a team where all of sort of the headwinds at play, their team success, the completeness of the club, the flexibility that they have, a robust prospect system, right? A relatively full arsenal of draft picks, material financial pressure. You know, this is it. This is like the time to buy.
Go all in.
I don't know if there's any team where it makes more sense from every single perspective for them to take a big swing over the next few months than the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah. Although it's going to be fascinating. Like, I think you're right, But, and they have been aggressive in the past.
Yeah, they have.
They've, like, made, Hayes, they've traded Stastny, first round picks, second round picks. 100%. Yeah, a lot. So
they buy hard.
You know they have the willingness to do it. But if the flip side of the parity thing is the impact on the trade market, right?
Right.
And, like, even Calgary, who I think we all looked at as, like, okay, teams are going to be, you know, rubbing their hands together and looking at that roster and calling and trying to get their guys.
Picking the carcass.
Yeah, picking the carcass clean. But is that going to be the case now? And you could have, because we've talked also about, you know, how basically every team in the NHL, with the exception of, like, three or four, not just needs defensemen, but, like, badly needs quality top four defensemen if they really want to be Stanley Cup contenders. That's already hard to find. If, you know, 25 teams think they're making the playoffs, it becomes even more difficult. And that's before you get to things like the center market and down and on down the line. I think there's going to be a lot of teams that look at it and say, okay, it's so wide open. If we're able to go add piece X, it could absolutely be us. We could absolutely be a Stanley Cup contending team. If you are one of the few sellers, at least as it stands right now, teams set to be sellers, I mean, I think it could be a very, very good seller's market, just because the combination of it being wide open and that meaning a lot of flawed teams that need that one extra piece, like, it's going to be a fascinating trade market with that dynamic at play as we get closer to the deadline here.
Yeah, you're right. There's a fair bit of, I mean, there's a fair bit of sort of pressure pushing prices upward at the moment in the league. And we've talked about this a lot, especially because I think when you look at these teams here, you know, I think they're I mean, okay, I guess, you know what? The other team that I think could be scary here is the Devils, by the way.
Okay.
The Devils, I think I got to put in that tier as well. But, you know, you look.
They're not playing Instagram hockey.
Oh, my God. You look at Minnesota, who the Canucks will play tonight, and they'll be without Brodin, but they've already swung the big trade for a defenseman.
Yep.
The Capitals, this year's PDO team, right, are super fun. Like, they're a PDO team, much like the Canucks were a PDO team last year, where it's like, yeah, they're getting wildly fortunate, but they're also...
There's good stuff happening
there,
too. They're
also playing good hockey. This is not just pure mirage stuff, but they're one of the few teams like them, Winnipeg, Carolina, New Jersey. And Vegas, maybe. Those are, like, the complete... And even Winnipeg you wouldn't put in there, given the Logan Stanley, Ville Heinola storyline. Like, those teams have complete defense cores. Everyone else, like Dallas, they have some issues on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have... The right side is an issue. The Maple Leafs, they probably could use another defenseman. Vancouver, I mean...
We know the story.
The
do you think they need a defenseman?
I do. Holy cow, do I ever. The LA Kings, you know, we'll see when Drew Doughty gets back, but that's a team that, well, they're actually the LA Kings might be interesting because they're the team that needs scoring punch.
Mm.
Everyone else, I feel like, is going to be like, we need to upgrade the second pair desperately. And LA, in some ways, will be like, well, we have our own guy coming in to bolster our blue line. Maybe we, but LA needs star talent. Like, good luck. Good luck.
Yeah, what star forward is going to move at the deadline this year, right? Like, I don't know.
Well, if you're on Twitter
Mitch
today.
Mitch Marner.
So, yeah, I mean.
Bringing it all back.
But Florida probably could use another defender. We'll see how sort of things shake out with Ekblad. We know that Edmonton's going to be in the market for another defender. We know Tampa's going to be in the market for another defender.
I mean, so basically every good team in the market for another defender.
Right. So what does that do to prices?
From like the five bad teams in the league who only have bad defensemen.
And
it's like great.
And yeah, and like everyone's going to be fighting over Mike Matheson and Marcus Pettersson and stuff. It's like, come on.
Yeah, and Mario Ferraro. Those are going to be the sweepstakes.
I mean, Mario Ferraro is at least fun.
Talking yourself into it.
Well, he's lefty. Like, he's a lefty and he does... bunch of stuff that doesn't make sense on an every shift basis, but it's fun at least. I don't know, man. If honestly, if Nashville decides to sell, that's the interesting one,
yeah,
because right? You've got Carrier and company.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's tough. It's going to be really tough to differentiate yourself, you know, even looking through sort of the like, what's the gap between Boston 519 point percentage, 16th in total points at this point in the season, and Seattle, 27th in total points, 468 point percentage. Like, I just don't see a huge gap in talent between those two teams, to be totally like, you know what the difference is that Grubauer is unplayable. That's it. That's like the sole difference. So yeah, I do think there's like a big mushy. I think more than anything, the mushy middle has like gotten to the point where it includes all but like six teams.
Yeah.
I think it's an expansion of the middle more than it is.
Yeah, well, like, teams have left the top and gone into the middle, but also left the bottom and gone into the middle, right? Like, everyone has migrated towards the middle more than we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, yeah, and so I don't think there's, but yeah, I mean, I do still think we should be willing to say and stamp Edmonton, Florida, the New Jersey Devils, the Carolina Panthers, or the
Carolina Hurricanes,
the Carolina Panthers, and the Florida Panthers, the Carolina Hurricanes, the Florida Panthers, the Edmonton Oilers, and I would add, you know, Dallas and Vegas and Winnipeg. I think that's right now the teams we should be looking at is like the seven that we expect to be toughest come playoff
time. Yeah.
And then, you know, that list doesn't even include like Minnesota, Washington, you know, Toronto's been getting good goaltending. Like, there's still teams, Vancouver, right? There's still teams sort of at the fringes. I think the New York Rangers, despite what they're going through it,
yeah,
through, should be sort of included there. And that's sort of that neck, and Tampa probably exists in that tier. And that's sort of like the 12, right? And that's your like solid playoff teams with a shot tier.
Yeah. And with a shot, like, depending on how the next 3 months play out, right?
Well,
or whatever, going into the deadline,
and
4 months. Yeah.
And the chances that this, like, to enter the playoffs the way the Canucks did last year with, like, a fully healthy roster and everyone playing at their best and all those vibes, like, you know, those chances don't come around that often, right? Like, that's the truth of it. We're seeing that play out for the Canucks this season. You know, some team is going to be riding high, and some teams are not going to be at full capacity, and some teams might enter the playoffs, and then suddenly it's like, well, Valeri Nichushkin has disappeared from our roster, right? Like, this is stuff that just happens for these teams. So much is going to go into deciding sort of who's in that real contender tier that's well outside of teams' control.
Yeah, and as we said, as we started off the segment saying, like, it really does seem more open this year, and I guess that's a good thing for the Canucks, as we kind of wait to see what this team is ultimately going to look like, when we're going to start to see their ceiling, when they're going to have a full complement of players. We'll see if they can kind of bump up and join that tier of top contenders at the top of the league. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of people texting in about maybe some trade targets for the Canucks out there, which teams they view as legitimate Stanley Cup contenders as well. We can read some of those on the other side. We got one final segment to go here in Canucks talk on a Canucks game day. They'll take on the Minnesota Wild at 5 o'clock. So stick around. Final segment coming up next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. Thomas Drantz here, of course, as well. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their locations to serve you, or online at dunbarlumber.com.
Your energy is not matching the song's energy.
Is this supposed to be like late night FM DJ?
Yeah, old CBC radio. Yeah.
Welcome back to CBC radio.
Is this not rights free Christmas music?
Yeah, rights free Christmas jazz.
It is. I didn't realize it was until we hit the
rights free Christmas jazz. Jesus, you just said all of my least favorite words in one sentence.
Are you a Grinch? You don't like Christmas?
No, I love. Who doesn't like Christmas?
The Grinch. He just said it. The Grinch.
The Grinch comes to like Christmas.
That's
true. Even the Grinch finds Christmas.
That's true.
Right, I do. However,
you said all your least favorite things.
I do,
Christmas,
however,
was in there.
I do, however, love to sit atop my ivory tower in judgment with my dog of the community around me. So I suppose there are some parallels between me and the Grinch.
Oh man, Stare down. Do you hate singing? Do you hate communal singing?
I hate Dom Lu Hu.
I'm a little too tall to be in Whoville.
To be not more than two?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Do you judge
people? You got some Who vibes.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Do you walk by people's homes and go, oh, their Christmas tree's up on November 29th? How dare they?
No, my Christmas tree's up.
So you have no issue with Christmas?
I have no. Why would I have an issue with Christmas?
Because you just said all yeah, my least favorite things.
I do think Dom's got you on this one.
No, rights-free Christmas music.
Jazz. So Christmas is
right. Rights-free Christmas jazz is like, ugh.
All your least favorite things.
Yeah, like
so Christmas.
I want to.
Amend of a statement.
In the context, no, the context with which, I'm not amending, I'm no capitulation.
I cannot be wrong.
In the context in which I was saying, ugh, to Christmas, is the concept of Christmas jazz. It's like, you couldn't, pigeons. I'm like the friendly vagabond in Home Alone 2. By which I mean the 47th president.
Okay, that's enough. That's enough of the pigeon noise.
What do you mean?
Oh, come on.
I mean Christmas jazz is horrible. Come on. We don't need Christmas-themed jazz.
Strong disagree.
Jazz is bad enough.
Charlie Brown Christmas soundtrack is the best Christmas album of all time.
Yes. Okay, but that's jazz?
That's yes.
Do-do-do. No.
It is. Do-do-do.
That's not. There's nothing jazzy about that.
Vin Scirali, I assure you, it is a jazz artist.
Vin Scirali.
Vince Guaraldi.
Okay, you're making up names.
I'm not.
You're making people up to win an argument. That's low.
Stand from your ivory tower.
Oh, man. I don't even know what to say to that.
You're losing your mind.
Yes, making up the guy well known for composing the Charlie Brown Christmas soundtrack.
I mean, it's a great song.
This is not jazz to you?
Yeah, it's horrible.
No, this is it. This is what you just said is a great song. You're confused, man.
Sorry, I am.
You're out of your element.
Okay, you know what? I don't like it.
Should I bring the pigeons back?
Yeah, bring the pigeons back. This is horrible. I'm not into it.
You are the Grinch.
I like the one that's fast. You know what I'm talking about, the... Do 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 do. That's the song that I like because it's not jazzy.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm getting which one you like.
The one. That's not the one.
No, that's Neo from The Matrix.
Yeah. That's not the song I like.
Okay. Anyways,
I'm not signing off on that. Claptrap. There we go.
This is also Christmas jazz.
Yeah. This is jazzy too.
This is not jazzy.
This is jazz.
What are you talking about, Thomas?
This is mystical and wonderful.
Which is the key to jazz.
No. There's nothing formless or noodling about this. I like it.
Okay, anyways. Well, we found the first jazz song that Thomas Trans likes.
I don't recognize it as jazz. I dispute this.
I like for you that it's like a logical impossibility. There's two Venn diagrams and they must remain separate.
Yes. I like pigeons. I will say that. Big
really?
Pigeon guy. No, obviously not. Pigeons.
Like, I've never heard anyone say that.
BPG, big pigeon guy.
BPG. Yeah.
All right. Well, we do still have like 19 minutes of showtime left here, so we'll try to do something. We'll try to do some talking about the Canucks here on Canucks Talk. They are playing the Minnesota Wild tonight, and Mike, the urologist from Brockville, texts in, do you guys think Minnesota is for real? Or are they just running on a hot streak right now?
Thomas hates rights, free stuff, Christmas, and jazz. How do you guys not understand this?
Hates rights.
Big, big hater of rights.
Big anti-rights guy.
By the way, Brett Festerling, one of our colleagues,
yes,
texted in, that's full jazz.
No.
It is.
I don't think so.
Well, anyways, we can settle it. We can settle it another time. But it is, in fact, jazz. Anyways, Mike.
I think it's fun cartoon music, but sure. Go ahead. You guys do you.
Do you guys think Minnesota's for real? Are they just running on a hot streak right now? I think it's the answer, as we talked about before, you know, Washington as a PDO team this year, the Canucks as a PDO team last year. Like, I think the answer is somewhere in the middle, right? For a lot of these teams, I think Minnesota is a very, very good team. Probably not picking them to finish first in the NHL by points percentage at the end of the year. I think their PDO is like 103 or something right now, which is one of the best marks in the league. So you could say they're getting a little bit fortunate, but I don't know. Like, I don't want, there's all, we had this discussion so much last year, right? Where you bring up a team's PDO and like, oh, hey, maybe they're getting a few extra bounces, and people translate that to, oh, this team's awful, right? You know, they're total frauds. They're a fraudulent team. It's like, well, I certainly don't think that about Minnesota. That's a really good team. Kirill Kaprizov is playing amazing. But yeah, they're probably on a little bit of an unsustainable hot streak to begin the year as well. That's fine. That well, happens. They're still a really good team.
Yeah, we know they're first in the NHL in point percentage, right?
Like, yeah.
They're,
yeah, no, so you can be not quite that and still a really good team.
Yeah, and we're not talking about how we think the Wild are the best team in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Truly, right? Like, we think they're a good team. And also, Kaprizov, you know, is a reliable driver of percentages, right? Like, that's one thing to bear in mind here. You know, there's an element to which, like, just like with the Canucks, like, we kind of expect the Canucks to be an above average finishing team because they have Quinn Hughes on, or sorry, because they have Elias Pettersson in particular playing major minutes for them. And we've seen over the course of time that Pettersson drives efficiency
mm-hmm.
when he's on the ice. We've also seen guys like JT Miller do it in spurts, although Miller's a little bit more of like in the pack, in that we've also seen Miller have seasons of like 7% on ice shooting percentage
yep.
or lower, right? Like, I don't think Miller is a sustainable driver of efficiency. He's also on the lineup at the moment. You know, the Wild, their shooting percentage stuff is, you know, like, really isolated to those minutes with Zuccarello and Kaprizov on the ice together. They've got some other guys shooting efficiently, but they're also good shooters. Guys like Marco Rossi are like creative players, right?
Mm-hmm.
Guys like Matt Boldy are creative players. They can finish. So, you know, have the Wild been a little bit fortunate? Yeah. Are they going to keep outscoring their opponents 2-1 at 5-on-5 all season long? No. But they have enough of a core of steel to have staying power. They also have good goaltending. Gustafson, who the Canucks will yep. see tonight, is legit good. You combine that with having one of the best actual efficiency drivers in the league in Kaprizov. It's like, yeah, your baseline's a little bit higher to sustain something. And, you know, they're 103, 103.7, something like that. That's not 105. That's not 106.
No.
That's not, you know, like the Caps 2 weeks ago were at 105. That was like, whew, that's a bender, right? That they've been fortunate. They're not on some preposterous historic bender here.
Yeah, this is much more in the realm of like typical good team off to a really hot start, right? That you see all the time in the NHL over a stretch of, I mean, what do they play? 25 games, 24 games, right? It's not that surprising, even though you would also expect it to come back to earth a little bit as the season goes on. And, you know, still, even if it does come back to earth a little bit, they still have a chance to be a really, really good team for the rest of the year.
But, you know, we built our list of elite teams and we didn't include them.
No.
So I think we're correcting for the fact that they've been a little bit unsustainably hot in the early going.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting, though, because, I mean, so often when you see a team at the top of the standings right around this time of the calendar, but you're not putting them in that Stanley Cup contender conversation, one of the things you point to is like, well, hey, they're playing really well right now. They're getting great goaltending, but do they have the high-end talent? Well, Minnesota has Kirill Kaprizov, who's the Hart Trophy favorite right now, right? So they do, at least with one player, they very much check that box.
They also have outs to level up further as the season goes on. So they have guys like, they called up Liam Ögren,
mm-hmm.
who's not going to play tonight. Looks like he's a 13th forward for now. But, you know, Liam Ögren is really, really impressive, right? A big, powerful winger, a former line mate of Jonathan Lekkerimäki, good friends with Lekkerimäki.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's gone down and he's got 5 goals in 8 games in the American League, right? Like, he's, you know, 6 foot, 190 pounds with a lot of speed and finish. I mean, that's like exactly the template of like third line player
who down the stretch, you know, becomes a little more comfortable at the NHL level and then can be a force in the, for you in the playoffs, like something that modifies what your ceiling is as a team because they're a real goal threat, right? They're really a top six player, but they're playing third line minutes.
Yeah.
Like they've got a bunch of interesting young players sort of coming or percolating, you know, in Iowa and such that I think could level them up down the stretch here. And that's sort of where I think the Wild are exciting. It's like they've had elite results in the early going. I don't know that they're an elite team as currently composed, but I think they have the one of the more straightforward paths to be more than they are now by the end of the season without swinging a blockbuster trade. Although arguably they already did.
Well, and then you get into beyond this year, right? Mm-hmm. Because I believe after this year, they don't completely come off the books, but the Parise Suter buyout hits go from a combined $14.7 million this year to a combined $1.6 million next year. So that's an extra $13 million bonus cap space coming the Minnesota Wild's way. You add that on to the young talent you're talking about, which could contribute this year, but it's certainly coming in the pipeline. And then, man, that's a team that already top of the league right now. We'll see if they can sustain it. But they have tools to get a lot better, not just for the rest of this year, but in the years to come as well. Man, they're going to get the benefit of those cap hits coming off the books as at the same time the cap is poised to skyrocket. Like that, it's going to be Bill Guerin must just be over the moon with anticipation to spend some money this summer.
Well, and they've got this robust prospect system, right? They're going to have Riley Hite, for example, at the World Junior Championships. So he's going to be amazing. Like, he's such a sick, creative forward. You know, Maxim Kuznetsov and on are already contributing at the NHL level. Marco Rossi's a good, creative young centerman. I mean, there's a lot going for this Wild team now that they've sort of slogged through the sort of buyout penalty years, and then they've been a little bit in the wilderness, right? They haven't been a contender by any means during this stretch, but they've at least accumulated and competed, right? They've remained in the mix and they've accumulated a ton of talent.
Yeah, they've never been bad.
No,
like truly bad, right?
No, and wretched. I mean, they're going to be a super. You make the playoffs this year. You know what I mean? You have a fun season this year. You get Kaprizov done.
Yeah,
you have a ton of cap space and flexibility to spend beyond the season. That's going to be a very desirable free agent destination for a lot of NHL players.
650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dan texts in, what under the radar defensive targets are out there? He says, my pipe dream is Noah Dobson from the Islanders.
And that is a pipe dream.
Keep dreaming on that one. Absolutely.
Love that, though.
As great a player as he is. But in terms of below the radar, and look, I don't know. Somebody else texted this.
We get these questions in a lot, and it's just like, oh, God. I'm sorry to tell you this.
No, I have one, though, and I don't know if it's – I don't know if it counts as below the radar necessarily, and maybe it's just because I've been talking to you too much over the last few years, but somebody texted in the name earlier, and it's not the first time we've mentioned
it. Will Borgen.
It's Will Borgen.
Yeah.
But I just keep coming back to it. It's like
– yeah, no, Will Borgen rocks.
The salary – they've got
he's right-handed.
Money. They've
he's
got
big.
Money
he's
committed
talented.
To two guys at his position on his side long term ahead of him, right? In Adam Larson and Brandon Montour. He's a pending unrestricted free agent. He's only 27. The team is not that good and probably not in a position to hang on to a pending unrestricted free agent past the trade deadline. We'll see. But probably not if they keep playing like this. And like that. That's it. Like, and I get he doesn't have the name cachet or the like, oh, they got to go out and get a difference mover who clearly slots into their top four, right? And, you know, has done that role in the past. But basically every other box for a defenseman you might be interested in. And then, as you said, like, he's good. He's mobile. He does all these things. He has size. He checks pretty much every other box. Now, but it doesn't only apply to the Canucks. Lots of other teams around the league will be like, hey, that's a pretty enticing trade piece that Seattle has. They're a pretty interesting one. But I just keep coming back to that name as a guy that makes a ton of sense for this Canucks team to go after at some point. Maybe not in the near term as a reaction to the Philip Hronek injury, right? We'll see if they do end up even doing something on that front. It might depend a lot on what his ultimate timeline is, whether he does need surgery or not. But I don't know. Like, I have a hard time finding a better fit, a cleaner fit, a simpler fit than Will Borgen that could be out there right now.
Yeah, I mean, Will Borgen rocks. You don't have to sell me.
Yes, I know I don't.
Like, obviously, guys.
But there's a lot of guys who are good that don't make sense as a trade target. Sure. You know what I mean? I think it's the intersection of like, he's good, and there's a lot of reasons he makes sense as a trade target.
Right. One of the guys that stands out to me is, and this is going under the radar and people are going to hate it, but Tyson Barrie, Calgary Flames, has only gotten into 9 games, but watching Flames games, watching the Predators last year, watching that game 5 in Vancouver where he got back into the lineup and teamed up with Ryan McDonagh, and they were fantastic shutting down the Canucks that night. I think Tyson Barrie is at this point in his career where we still think of him as like defensive liability power play specialist, and he's never going to play the power play ahead of Quinn Hughes or Philip Hronek, so he doesn't make a lot. I think he's rounded out his game and is just waiting for an opportunity now. Like, I honestly watch this guy play. He looks like he's put on a lot of weight, and I don't mean in like a negative
way.
He looks like a heavier player than he did as a younger, sort of speedier offensive defender. There's some solidity that I don't think he had as a younger man. And I think there's also the he's hung around and has kind of learned some new tricks. And now every time I watch him play, I'm like, this guy's defensively reliable. Like, he's just waiting for a shot at some point for someone to actually give him some trust in a more classic, like, hybrid shutdown role. And I just think he wouldn't cost a lot to get. No one else has given him this look anyway. But for a team that needs puck moving, I just feel like he's transformed who he is as a player, and the league hasn't quite caught up to it because of his sort of outsized reputation from his Colorado days and, you know, that season in Toronto that didn't exactly go the way that he would have wanted or that the Leafs would have wanted. So he'd be like one of the guys that I just think is a low-cost gamble because I swear when I watch him play, I just think he's completely changed his spots as a two-way player at the NHL.
Well, and if you want to talk about under the radar, right, and low cost, if you just want to throw something at the wall, like, he's not even getting in regularly for Calgary, right? I believe he was there on a PTO.
Yeah.
And then signed a deal.
He's played 9 games. But he's looked good. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to think, like, the acquisition cost would be extremely minimal if you wanted to try that.
Yeah.
And I think the question that immediately comes up, and as you said, look, a lot of this is reputation-based, but it's not even so much, like, his play in the defensive zone as much as, is he realistically going to get that chance here in Vancouver, right? The chance that you're talking about that he's maybe earned, given how much this team prioritizes size on the blue line.
Yeah, and that's fair.
Are they ever gonna run out a lineup on the blue line that has Quinn Hughes, Eric Brännström, and Tyson Barrie on it?
No,
probably not.
But in my mind's eye, I'm like, I'd be interested to see what Myers, Brännström, Soucy, Barrie would look like. I think you could have enough puck moving and enough defensive acumen on all sides if Tyson Barrie is leveled up the way that I think he has. Other than that, though, you're like, really, man, that the options
you
are pretty
stretch.
Grim. Like,
you gotta
you're
stretch.
talking about, like, do you want to roll the dice on Jan Ruda?
Mm.
He's got some championship pedigree. He's looked pretty good in San Jose. Cody Ceci. I mean, Cody Ceci for a song, I think you could do worse. I think you could do better.
You could do better.
but also, hey, you want some clutch Game 7 goals? Cody Ceci, Mr. Game 7. Bring it on. Look, there's not a ton of options. It is a very thin market of sort of expiring or like pending free agent defenders, which is why, you know, I keep talking about the Canucks, if they're going to swing big, looking at term.
For term, yeah.
Right? I think that's why the Zadorov thing's interesting. I think we need to be looking less at the expiring guys who would be affordable and more at sort of those guys you don't even think are available at the moment.
Yeah, I think a player, I mean, certainly like Barrie, but even a Will Borgen maybe, who is expiring, that might come more into play.
Will Borgen would be a home run.
Yeah.
You get in Will Borgen and extend him, you'll be very happy with
that. That might come into more into play, that sort of deal, as if they do decide to do kind of a, we need a guy in lieu of Philip Hronek right now, right? Like, while Philip Hronek's out, we got to do something, we got to add somebody to the mix. The big move that was we were all expecting, even with Philip Hronek, right? Like, we're kind of having two separate conversations here, right? There's the what do they do because of the Philip Hronek injury, if anything? Do they make a move? But then even if Philip Hronek's healthy, we were all expecting to go out and try to make a big swing on the blue line before the deadline anyways, right? And that one, which is still very much a conversation to be had if this team's form
demands it and justifies it by the deadline, I think that player would very likely be somebody with term, right? And then you're really starting to kind of expand the universe of potential candidates and get a little bit creative. But that's one where, as we've talked about, right, the team has to do enough. The team has to justify management being willing to go out and invest in a player with term, pay the acquisition cost for a player with term, commit that future salary cap space, all of those things. They need to see certain markers from the team first. And you can say they haven't really been in a position to do it given all the absences, but they're going to have to do it. They're going to have to show at least glimpses of that ceiling at some point.
But yeah,
for the team to go out and invest like that.
Usually I've got a guy by this time of the year where I'm like, that's the guy. Some smart team's going to get him. Mm. And it's like, other than Will Borgen, you know, like you've exhausted the names.
That's it.
I mean, I feel like the state of NHL defense is very, very top heavy. It just feels like there are absolutely not enough high caliber, top four quality guys to go around right now.
Yeah.
And to some extent, that's made the product really good.
That's true.
But it's, you know, it is notable from a team building perspective. You can just see it. Like you watch, you know, this New York Rangers team that really has only one pair going at the moment versus the New Jersey Devils last night where you've got a really complete blue line group. And man, it is noticeable. You watch Vegas play most teams and it is noticeable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Washington, like, as much as Washington's a PDO team or Minnesota's a PDO team, like they have defensive depth there. They have relatively complete blue line groups and it shows night after night. You can see it. You can see it when they go into Colorado and don't even bother hard matching MacKinnon because they're like, yeah, we're fine with Trevor Van Riemsdyk and Martin Ferravari against the MacKinnon line. And they're right. Like those guys are good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their third pair. I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible what sort of advantage those teams that are like really deep, really well constructed on the blue line have had over the first 6 weeks of the season, like more so than any time I can remember it.
Yeah, and I just so often when we're talking about these targets, right, the first question I ask is, can you see them playing top 4 minutes in a playoff series for a good team, right? And just the answer is no to so many of the names that are out there, right? Or at least, ooh, that would make me very nervous if I was a fan of that team and that guy was playing those type of minutes. Okay, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you for the text. Thank you for all the thoughts and the participation. Of course, it is a Canucks game day. They're taking on the Wild at 5. You'll be able to hear that one here on the station. The People Show is coming up next right here on Sportsnet 650.